Miss any part of Halford and Bruff in the Morning? Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts and don't miss an episode.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650 with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We're live from the Mobile Kintec studio here at Rogers Arena. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And by the way, shout out to Basketball Phil in the Dunbar Lumber text line who sent me a link to Mike Benton's Twitter feed, Mike Benton, radio host for the Seattle Kraken. And he has the roster and the lines that Seattle's sending to play the Canucks tonight. I won't go through the whole thing, but some of the notables, Jaden Schwartz, Andre Burakovsky, Brandon Tanev, Yanni Gord, Eli Tolvanen. That's up front on the blue line, Jamie Oleksiak, Brandon Montour, and your guy, Will Borgen, coming to play.
Will Borgen! And also my guy, Tolvanen. I love Tolvanen.
Sure.
So sick. You know, last year, the Kraken and the Canucks played a couple times, and it was stunning the extent to which I saw during that preseason and had the impression that where the Canucks were trying to get to in terms of structure was where the Kraken already were. Now, of course, that didn't matter once the regular season began. One of those impressions that that actually leads you astray during the preseason. But just something that I recalled as we sort of consider this, because, yeah, I mean, you have to be so careful about reading anything whatsoever into preseason. However, that seems like a pretty stacked
to be sending on the road. There's certainly no shortage of real NHL players that they're sending up here. So two pretty evenly matched lineups, honestly, I would say.
Oh, I would say the Kraken have way more NHL experience in their lineup.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah. So I would say the Canucks are and usually it's the opposite, right?
Usually
send the Patsy team to lose on the road in exhibition. That's not quite what it looks like is going to happen tonight when the Canucks face the Kraken, which makes it all the more interesting as a test for your Niels Amon, Vilmer Ulrichsson, Elias Pettersson tier of sort of player.
Yeah, to go up against some real NHL competition on the other side for the Seattle Kraken. All right, for more on tonight's game, I said it off the top. I'm hyped to do this. You know we love to hear from him here on the show. Let's hear from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet.
Yeah, a lot of energy. Having a day off yesterday helps, I think, the whole camp. You know, it's four straight days of skating. Then that's why you get a day off. And so, I'm just looking for the stuff that we practice in this game tonight. I think that's what coaches are looking for, use those elements in the game tonight.
How do you plan on going about the preseason? What do you want to address for your 6 games, especially 5 and 7?
Well, rule of thumb, you try to get the veteran guys at least 3 games, you know, I think. And then obviously we got some guys vying for positions. Usually you try to get those guys 3 or 4 games. And then obviously, you kind of spitball maybe a guy, you think, hey, you want to get him game, he might have a good game, you want to see him again. So that's kind of the rule of thumb you try to do.
Lankinen's going to be on the ice. How many times you plan
who's that?
Lankinen, your new goalie?
Yeah.
How many times you plan on using him in the preseason?
I don't know yet. We've got to get him on the ice here with Marco and team practices, but I got to get him in, you know, whether it's Friday or Saturday, one of those games, I think, or Monday. He'll get in one of those games, I think that's important that we get him in, but we gotta let him get some practice with us.
What's the plan for tonight? The goal.
Seeloffs.
60.
Yeah, I'm not. Maybe game 3 or 4. We might split. They're 2-1. I'm not a 30-30 guy, but I'd like to see C's play the whole game tonight.
There's a lot of things you want to do, Rick. You want to push the pace. You want to be more responsible. You want to get your systems play order. What do you look for in a game like tonight? Is there some individual curiosity about guys where you're trying to figure out where
they're
going to mesh, how
they're going to fit? Well, hockey IQ is big for me. So we did 4 days of some stuff that we want to see guys do, you know, and that's what I look for, you know. And obviously, you know, we just got to be careful because in the scrimmage, I know it's a scrimmage, but, we weren't changing that great. I didn't think we played fast at all. Maybe guys were tired or whatever, but we got to be careful that we stay. You guys know the same old thing. I'm not getting away from our staples. It's important. We want to play fast, but you can't play fast and forget about your staples. And I thought the fourth day I saw that. We just got to be, you know, so it's been addressed. I want to make sure guys understand that.
Heinen calls himself a complimentary player.
Yeah.
What have you seen so far with Bess and Miller? Looks like a pretty seamless fit.
Just a smart guy, you know, knows where to go. If Bess and Millsy are pushing the envelope, he knows, he's the third guy back. He's smart that way. He's got some speed. I've really liked this camp so far.
How about Ratu?
You
played him with some good players throughout camp again tonight. What's the window for him to make this team, and what do you want to see?
Well, I think if you look at his development, when we first got him, his skating was, just okay. I think, but if you watch the Abbotsford guys and the development guys did a hell of a job with him, because he's a different player than he was last year in the sense. Had a good year last year, but I see a little bit more, another level. Looks fast out there with the skating. Every drill he does, he goes 100%. Even the morning skate, I told him, slow down a bit because he wants to save for tonight. So I like that attitude, though, from a young kid. He's trying to make the team. Now, whether he does or not, he is trying to make this team.
How about Pedersen and just what you've seen from him playing with Phil?
With Roddick. Oh, Roddick. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
EPD.
ED, yeah. Really, it's funny, Jim Rutherford, we're talking, and I played with Alf, he looks like a little Alf Samuelson out there, just the way he plays, a little abrasive, so I don't want to put pressure on him, but he's a smart guy, and I think Phil has really helped him. If you listen to Phil, I thought Phil's had a really good camp, but he's telling him, he's yelling instructions where to go, and I think that's really helping his development.
Rick, I know you want the competition out there. Realistically, how many jobs are for grabs?
I mean, it's hard to say, but there's spots open. We're looking for guys to, this week you're looking for guys to really show us, they want a job or they want that spot. I think it's important.
Sammy Blay, obviously, you praised his work in Penticton, but a guy like that, the way he plays, this is where it's kind of go time for him, isn't it?
Yeah, it's hard to evaluate guys just in the 3 days of rush. Some guys look better than others in rush. And then when the game starts, it kind of flips sometimes. So you got to, I'm looking for Sam to be that hard forechecking guy. I talked to Craig Berube. He had him when they, in St. Louis, being a first forechecker. He likes to take the body. If he can play defensively for us, I think Footy might have him penalty kill maybe tonight to see if he can penalty kill. So, yeah, I mean, we're looking to see him play an abrasive style for us.
Did Craig make a recommendation to you about him before you guys brought him in?
We talked a little bit, yeah. We talked a little bit.
What was his
opinion? Well, he's a good forechecker. I mean, there are some things that he's got to work on. I'm not going to get into it, but, there's stuff that we got to work on with him, for sure.
Who's that?
Teddy is going to practice with us today, first practice today with the non-guys, so that's the first step. So, I'm not sure how many practices he'll get before he plays, but he'll get I'm pretty sure he'll get a preseason game. Maybe two, but he's looking good.
Is this just a night off for JT? I mean, we're not used to seeing Brock and JT split up and hiding through camp. But
yeah, I want to see Rats. I want to see some guys, Sass. And Millsy, he's top three fitness guy on our team. He came in great shape. I'm not sure that he, early on, he has to play right now. But, he'll at least get two games at least. So, and he likes to play, but he gets it.
Rick, have you had a history of PTO guys making your team? I mean, there's been a history here in the past with fourth line guys like Jack Skilhaven come to camp. They give everything the coach wanted and were hard pressed not to give him a shot and give him a contract.
I'm trying to think. I think there's been a couple of guys I've made the team on a PTO. But there's been some guys on a PTO that actually have signed a contract and made some good money after that. So, you look, usually PTO guys, look at Pacioretty had a couple goals the other night, you're looking for somebody to be desperate out there.
There's a little bit of stress, for players coming into a preseason, especially the younger players. Are there any conversations that you have with players, to tell them just relax, play your game, approach that?
Arlison, for me, I had the development guys myself and the Twins talk to them. I want him to play like he did in rookie camp. I think he's, he's with NHL players, so I think he's just kind of waiting around. He doesn't want to be disrespectful. I want him to be disrespectful in the sense that go get the puck, want the puck, do what you did in rookie camp. I think sometimes it's a natural, when you're a young guy, you don't want to yelp for the puck, and I want that. So I think, you know, I'm looking for him to really, I want to see, like, I thought the 3 days was okay, but I think he's just waiting around. His camp was really good. So that was one guy we had to talk to. Of, let's go. Like, you don't have to be respectful. Just go play. I think that's something that we're looking for him. He's a great prospect for us. I want to see him play tonight.
Rick, how much will you also use this preseason to set your goaltending as much as you can with what you're dealing with?
Yeah. I mean, you see Lofts the other day in scrimmage was excellent. You know, I think he deserves the first game, and I think he deserves, you know, the lion's share of it. But getting a guy like Lehkonen, he's an NHL goalie, had a good year last year. We got to get him in the mix, and the other guys are, you know, obviously they'll get their time.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet sharing his thoughts with the media before his team opens their preseason campaign against the Seattle Kraken tonight here at Rogers Arena. And some interesting tidbits and nuggets in there from Rick Tocchet, as always. And, of course, most notably, we got our first type of guy update from Rick Tocchet of the year. Specifies that Archer Shelovs will play all 60 minutes tonight because Tocchet says he's, quote, not a 30-30 guy. So you can add that to the not list.
Not a 30-30 guy. Yep. Not a 30-30 guy. Also wants Elias Pettersson to go for the knees.
Yeah.
Ulf Samuelsson comp.
Ulf Samuelsson.
Let's go.
It's pretty awesome, I got to say.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. I mean, obviously, former teammate of Tockett's in Pittsburgh.
And one of the dirtiest players of his
generation. Legendary hitter player of the hitting player of the 90s. Played over 1,000 games in the NHL. So.
Yeah, I mean, Ulf Samuelsson had a rep.
He sure did.
In the YouTube era, in the Twitter era, oh my goodness. Can you imagine the calls
the
for Ulf suspension?
The Ulf Samuelsson discourse
would have been unreal.
In today's day and age would have been something else.
Yeah,
absolutely something
like
else.
Like the two guys who probably fared best playing in an era before Twitter, Ulf Samuelsson and Denny Potvin.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that about Potvin.
Oh,
I mean, Potvin, I know the rap, obviously.
Potvin ended Derlago's career.
Yeah.
Or not ended, but certainly impacted it significantly, mostly because Derlago was dancing them all night.
Fair enough.
Big moment in Canucks history. Yeah, no. Denny Potvin had a mean streak, man. No doubt about it.
Fair enough. Some other things in there from Rick Tocchet. You know, I thought it was interesting to even hear him say that he wasn't really pleased with the staples he saw in the scrimmage in Penticton, right? Mentioned that he didn't think they were changing very well, weren't really playing fast. Also went on to say, you know, you got to play fast, but you can't play fast and then forget about your staples. And he says, it's been addressed. So already, right, seeing a little bit of that push and pull of, hey, just because we spent all training camp, you know, having fun on the rush and scoring sick 3-on-2 goals, there's still these things, these principles we have to adhere to. And, you know, that's going to be one of the themes, I think, certainly of preseason, probably all year for the Canucks is striking that balance. But as Rick Tocchet says, quote, it's been addressed with the players, and he wants to see that put into action tonight. Comments on a couple of other young players as well. And again, more just really positive thoughts about Atu Ratu, right? And talked about the job that the development staff in Abbotsford has done with him, says he looks like a different player than when they acquired him. And in particular, shouted out his skating and how that's improved, says he looks fast with his skating right now. And then also the praise for the work ethic, the praise for the character, right? Every drill he does, he goes 100%. And part of what he's saying in that scrum, right, is, okay, there's maybe not super obvious jobs open, but there's always opportunities, and you want to see guys act like they're aware of that and they're trying their hardest to earn those opportunities. And I think that's kind of what he's saying about Ratu, right? He says it, right? He's trying to earn a job. He might not do it, but you can tell that he has the right mindset to try to earn a job. And I think for a player who's still as young as Atu Ratu, who does have that level of skill in his game that made him that, you know, in the pre-draft process so highly touted, if you combine that with that mentality that Rick Tocchet's talking about, I mean, that's a really good way to earn yourself NHL opportunities in the near future here.
Yeah, one, and look, Ratu's a fascinating one, right? Because, and I honestly thought Tocchet's answer alluded to just how steep the climb is, right? Like, he might not make the team, but he's trying to make the team, right?
Yep.
And he was impressive, man. He had a really strong Young Stars tournament. He had a really strong camp. You know, Tocchet keeping that line together to me is notable, right? To me is something. There's going to be some answers required at center on this team. As a result of injury, as a result of whatever, at some point this season. There is opportunity there. The fact that the team's kept him there actually probably makes his climb to a roster spot steeper than it would if he'd been kept at wing, but also I think reflects that he might be the forgotten man among the Canucks prospects for fans and for media, but it doesn't seem to be internally, right? They believe in this player as a center. They're going to give him a ton of rope there. And, you know, look, the thing about guys like Ratu, right, it's not unheard of for a 21-year-old to level up significantly.
Yep.
And when they do, they tend to demand to be in the show right away. You know, it's such an interesting thing. If he's going to break out, if he's going to be an impact guy, it probably does happen this year, whether or not he makes the team right away. You know, maybe he goes back to the A and demands to be back up here because his performance is at that level over a brief span of time. So, yeah, I'm really fascinated to see what that line
just
can
to clarify, you don't mean like his agent calls and demands, right? You mean like
his form.
Yeah, his play is like, well, we can't keep this guy out of the NHL. He's playing too well.
Right. You know, I think a good example, like a good one from recent Canucks history would be Troy Stetcher, right? Troy Stetcher came in and it was apparent at Young Stars that this guy was, you know, going to eclipse Jordan Subban, who was sort of the top organizational RD prospect at the time immediately. And then you see him at training camp and you're like, okay, this guy actually probably is an NHL player. Is in fact, probably one of the six best defensemen on this ice sheet right now.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't make the team. He went down to Utica for two games, right? Like within two games at the AHL level, it was like, okay, right. We need to have this guy who's clearly better than our other NHL options. And he was back, right? Like these guys that are ready, that are NHL players, they're NHL players right away. You know, once they get there, and based on what we saw down the stretch with Ratu, based on what we saw in training camp, I'm not saying he's there. I'm saying if he is, mm-hmm. right? And we'll learn more tonight. We'll learn more over the course of the preseason. It's going to be now.
And a big opportunity for him tonight, skating with Nils Höglander and Connor Garland, and, you know, Tocchet continued to rave about Garland, and it seems like offensive opportunities are going to follow Connor Garland around. So if you're playing on the same line as him, you're in a good position. Now, Rick Tocchet also giving the update about Teddy Bluger. And look, as we said, he's a full participant in the skate that's still happening in front of us now with the non-game group. So it doesn't sound like there's going to be an absence for Teddy Bluger to start the season. Tocchet expects him to play in the preseason at least one game, maybe two. That spot might go away, but that competition for a fourth line role, that competition to be the first guy called up, maybe even the 13th forward. You know, I think it's notable that Ratu is getting the better assignment in terms of line mates tonight, the clearly better assignment than Nils Amon or Max Sasson, right? Not that he's going to usurp Nils Amon for that 13th forward spot, but I think it shows that the coaching staff sees a certain amount of upside and likes what they're seeing so far from Ratu, but they're giving him that opportunity with Garland and Höglander.
Well, and the Garland question remains to me not is Garland good or whatever conversations that we've had in the past. It's how much longer can this team afford to play him on the third line?
Garland?
Yeah. At some point, does he have to go up the lineup simply because his form demands it or because this team needs it? Because this team needs, you know, honestly, their most consistent 5-on-5 play driver since he arrived in Vancouver. Further up lineup, and you know, people will say stuff about his finishing ability and on and on. Do you want to guess how many more goals have I done this with you yet?
I don't know. Probably. Maybe off air.
Do you want to guess how many goals more than Connor Garland, JT Miller has scored at 5-on-5 since Garland joined the team three seasons ago?
Is it like 10?
It's 2.
Amazing.
Isn't that stunning?
That is truly stunning.
Like, you'd never think that.
No.
But it's 2. I mean, this guy, like, in terms of 5-on-5 point producers in this lineup, right? It's Pettersson and Miller, and then it's Garland.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not Pettersson and Miller and then some distance and then Garland. It's Pettersson and Miller and then Garland and then some distance and everyone else. You know, like, that's – at some point, I'm curious to see if the reality of what Garland actually is capable of, the fact that he might even be a top-line caliber true talent player, sort of – forces or causes the Canucks to adjust accordingly.
I think right now it's just such an ace in their hole, in the hole, right?
Totally.
Now, right? Like, I think that's how they view it is, man, we've got this guy that Tocchet really loves that we know can create offense, and we have the luxury of playing him in a third-line role. I do wonder if some combination of Lekkermäki, Sprong, Hoglander isn't getting you the results you want alongside Elias Pettersson and Jake DeBrusk, all of a sudden then does it become an option
yeah.
for you, right? But I think I have no problem trying to push as long as you can with him on the third line, because it is such an advantage for you to have that depth. To have a guy who's capable of driving offense like he is on
and
your
play.
Third line is a really, really it's a real luxury to have.
Yeah, it also speaks to Tocchet's belief in the importance of a third line, right? Mm. Like, this is not simply like a third line assignment for Tocchet is something that matters, something that he prizes, something that he believes translates into winning hockey, right? So Garland being sort of a jack of all trades engine on that third line, you know, also reflects his prominence or value in Tocchet's mind. I just sort of wonder, like, if we go through this season again and you're talking about, you know, the top line sort of being like a 50-50 group mm-hmm. in terms of shot clip again, right? And you're talking about the Pettersson line being like a 52% shot clip again, and then you're looking at the third line and it's once again head and shoulders above the others in terms of the rate at which they actually control play. Does that cause the team to use Garland more? Which, by the way, happened in the playoffs. It's just that that also corresponded with sort of Pettersson being really on what was used as a third line.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, at some point, like we saw it, with the chips down, Connor Garland's going to play top 6 minutes anyway. Why not make that conscious, deliberate, and from the start?
The one thing I definitely would want to see this year, because, again, I think there's a lot of logic. As you said, if you look at, like, 5-on-5 play drivers, 5-on-5 scores, it's Pettersson, Miller, Garland. I get the logic of splitting those guys up. So you have one on each of your top three lines, right? Like that, I think there's
sure.
a lot to be said for that. But what we also see is even NHL teams that typically take the approach of spreading their talent more across the lineup, they have the option to load up in their bag,
right?
Right? And I think the one thing is, even when Garland ended up playing top 6 minutes, he did it alongside Elias Lindholm and Dakota Joshua, and it was more because Pettersson had just fallen off a cliff and you couldn't play him in top 6 minutes. So I would be interested in trying to get those reps for Garland alongside one of Elias Pettersson or JT Miller, because there's always been this notion, and, you know, I've looked at the numbers in the past, but I don't have them in front of me, of, well, does it really work because, you know, he needs the puck on his stick and Pettersson does too, and how much are you really getting? As you said, he's one of the team's best 5-on-5 scorers, best 5-on-5 play drivers. You would love to know, even if it's not your go-to thing, that, hey, when we need a goal or we're trying to push in the third period of a big game, we can rejig our lineup, we can get two of our top three guys together, and we can have that next level. Right now, it doesn't feel like it's an option, right? Like, people are texting in, hey, I'd love to see Garland with Miller and Besser. Sure, I'm open to that. Is it Garland with Pettersson and DeBrusk? I don't know what it is, but doing some experimenting, doing some tinkering to know what that looks like, I think is a really good idea this season.
Yeah, and I wouldn't claim to know what it is, but I'll tell you what I'd be most interested to see, and it remains a DeBrusk, Miller, Besser top line with Pettersson centering Joshua and Garland once Joshua's back in the lineup.
That's
like
another
that,
thing. That's a suggestion we got, not with DeBrusk, obviously,
yeah.
but – Petey in between Joshua and Garland was a suggestion we got a lot in our inbox last
that,
year.
I'm desperate to see what that would look like, and it's not like it would hurt you on the third line when you're rolling out like Suter, Heinen, and
yeah.
Hoglander or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, to me that makes a ton of sense in my mind's eye and still gives you a third line and a guy like Hoglander who could be, you know, a sort of spark plug driver for you. Not maybe at the level that Garland's
no,
at.
No, but do it close enough that you don't feel the pain too bad in the bottom six.
Yeah, well, and you know, at the age of 23, Garland was about to play his first NHL season, right? Like, the idea of Hoglander getting into that area is not outrageous by any means.
All right, we'll take a break. Again, you hear the music. It's time. We're being played off unceremoniously or ceremoniously by our own producer here. So we'll take a break. One final segment coming up as the Canucks get ready to take on the Seattle Kraken tonight at Rogers Arena. More Canucks talk here on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here on a Canucks game day live from the mobile Kintec studio at Rogers Arena. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome details at DunbarLumber.com. So I wanted to get into this today as well, Drancer, because, of course, as you remember, great controversy swept Canucks Nation last year around this time when your other employer, The Athletic, put out their annual player tiers list and dared to have Quinn Hughes, of course, famously, in tier 3B, and then he goes on to win the Norris, and it was a punchline and a meme all year for Canucks fans. It was.
100%. It was great.
It was great.
Also, I just want to remind everyone that Quinn Hughes was top 12 in the Athletics ranking of players. I believe he rated behind Seth Jones in ESPN's.
Yes.
ESPN got lucky.
Yeah. They did.
3B was too memorable. You know what I mean? Like, 3B was packaged too well is really what hurt Dom.
Yeah. But this year, back with the new edition of the NHL player rankings, and everyone will be happy to know, in Tier 1, and I'll read the description of what Tier 1 is, per, it's not just Dom, I believe it's also, Sean Gentile, Shayna Goldman, doing their work, and of course they run this list through past NHL front office sources as well, so a ton of work goes on into this. Here's what they describe as a Tier 1 player, a top 10 player, someone who is... What are we doing here?
Tears for Fears. Go on.
All right. Someone who is very likely to get serious trophy consideration at season's end and whom championship caliber teams are built around, the best player on almost any team in the league. Now, I do like that they specify it's a top 10 player, and there are, in fact, 12 players in Tier 1, but close enough, whatever. And so Quinn Hughes finds himself in that category of player. Now there's like sub-tiers within it, right? So McDavid, MacKinnon, Matthews are 1A, 1B. You've got Barkov, Dreisaitl, Kucherov, Cale Makar. And then Quinn Hughes is in 1C, along with his brother Jack, David Pastrnak, Matthew Tkachuk, and your favorite guy, Adam Fox, finds himself in that group. As well.
Yeah, like one of those things is not like the other, right?
Yeah, it's true, actually. Yeah.
Like, I don't know what else to tell people. Like, touch grass. Watch the games. Stop it.
So anyways,
stop trying to make this Adam Fox is as good as Quinn Hughes thing happen. Like, it's just, it's wild.
Well, there is something especially about...
It's Adam Fox is such a smart, sharp, productive, excellent top pair right-handed defenseman. Quinn Hughes is a driver from the back end unlike anything else in the league.
Yeah.
Including, by the way, Cale Makar. I mean, there are things that Cale Makar can do because of his size and his shot, like physically, mm-hmm. right, that Quinn Hughes can't. Okay? And so if you're insisting on putting Makar above Hughes, even though Makar clearly leans far more heavily on MacKinnon to drive play, whereas Hughes is the guy driving for Vancouver, like... We can weight things differently, but at least I understand where you're coming from, right? The Fox in that class thing, just absolutely befuddling. It does not make sense. It's wrong. It's flat out wrong.
And I will say, especially when you make it not just a Hughes versus Fox comparison, but when you like the description I read, right? Someone whom championship caliber teams are built around. Like, I don't know if Adam Fox screams best player on a Stanley Cup team. You know what I mean? Where you're looking at, you're like, that guy's going to carry your team to a Stanley Cup berth.
No.
Quinn Hughes, I see that. Every other player on that list, I see that.
It's wild.
Not
man.
So much with Adam Fox.
I honestly just don't understand it. I think he's brilliant. I think he's a top five defenseman in the league. I think putting him in the same class as Hughes and Makar does not make sense. That's it. I fundamentally disagree with my colleagues as I regularly do, especially when they're Dom.
So I wanted to mention that one because of the reaction to it last
now,
year.
Now find what there's got to be a controversial Canucks ranking.
Oh, there absolutely is.
Let's go.
Well, because you know who is in tier 2 is Elias Pettersson. You know who's in tier 3
JT Miller.
Right.
So they have Elias Pettersson ranked ahead of JT Miller, and there will certainly be people who want to debate that after the way Elias Pettersson's season ended, and of course going into the playoffs last year. But again, we talked about this in the show yesterday. The rest of the hockey world outside Vancouver is way, way higher on Elias Pettersson than people are right here. But what I find most interesting about this, and look, this is obviously a very kind of, you know, rough way of looking at it, a rough metric, but, you know, the Canucks had six players in the top 150. This was the top 150 players. So Hughes was in tier one, Pettersson tier two, Demko and Miller in tier three, and then Besser and Filipronik in tier five, right? So six players distributed throughout the tiers at different levels here. And, you know, there's some elite teams with like seven players, right? Florida had seven guys, Edmonton, Dallas. But by this one very rough metric, the Canucks grade out pretty well. Vegas with six, you know, Colorado has only five, but two of them are McCarr and McKinnon. So that kind of balances out not having that sixth guy. And I thought it really illustrated what we were talking about, you know, with like the difference between the Canucks and the Kings, right? Where it's just like you, when you go through this process, I think it helps really crystallize why people are so much higher on the Canucks. Now it's not just, oh, they had a good team last year, but if you do the exercise kind of breaking down top players versus top players, like they grade out pretty well around the league. Well,
especially because I think Garland should probably be on that list. I don't know. Perpetually underrated, but I honestly would make that argument, right? If Besser's on that list, I think Garland and Besser are fundamentally like of equivalent value or should be seen that way. Because Besser's obviously the better goal scorer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the bigger body, more trusted, more demonstrated track record in tough minutes. But, you know, Besser can't or hasn't in his career driven a line the way Garland has every single year the last 3 years, right? I mean, there's, again, that just comes down to weighting, right? Like, what do you value? What do you care about the most, right? Besser is one of 25 guys that can reliably beat set goaltenders with his shot,
mm-hmm.
right? That matters a ton. That's what teams pay for, right? No question. But the ability to control play the way Garland does, for me, I'd place more prominent weighting on that just in terms of how I value the game, what I prioritize in sort of looking at players and teams and what I think wins games. So, you know, that I think that also would match with my disagreement with my colleagues about Quinn Hughes versus Makar.
And I think the other thing for me is it does, just looking at it, kind of emphasize, and this is one of, for me, is going to be one of the most interesting things to watch all season for the Canucks is, now maybe you think it's Garland and they don't need to add this player, but just that, you know, because I said they skip a tier, right? They go Hughes tier one, Pettersson tier two, Demko and Miller tier three, no one in tier four, and then Besser and Hronek in tier five, right? And just like that need for that one other player, whether it's at Besser and Hronik's level, whether it's maybe a hair above them, or right, like that one extra guy to push you from, what were you saying? They were kind of fringes of the, like, eighth in terms of Stanley Cup odds, to push you from eighth to like top five bona fide inner circle cup contender, right? And again, this is a very rough metric. It's imperfect. We all know that. But I think it just helps kind of clarify how different teams stack up. And for me, you look at it and we can debate which position they need to add, but just that one extra guy that you feel really, really strong about being a major contributing player on a contender, I think the pursuit for that player is going to be a huge subplot for the Canucks this season as they try to turn this into a, you know, no doubt about it, Stanley Cup contender.
Right. And, you know, it'll be really interesting to watch that process unfold here, right? I mean... So, you know, Tocchet was talking about guys on PTOs who end up earning, you know, lots of money thereafter, right? And making teams thereafter. And he couldn't think of any prominent examples. But I've got one for you. Danton Heinen made,
yep.
I think he had two consecutive deals where he converted PTOs into a contract. One of them, by the way, wasn't done until like late October. Right, like the season started and unfolded until the Bruins cap situation allowed them to sign him. Or maybe it was the Penguins, but one of those two landing spots for Heinen. And, you know, we kind of have back of the envelope just penciled him in, right, to a top line role here. You know, when I talk about like, hey, do you want to see what Joshua and Garland look like with Pettersson? I mean, there are still some hope bets placed in the top six, right? Mm-hmm. There's still an environment to which, you know, I think we're looking at players complementing Pettersson and Miller in part because of what Pettersson and Miller can do, as opposed to fits that can help elevate those centermen,
yep.
right? And look, sometimes it's unexpected players that come in and do that. You know, I still think about the Zach Hyman comp, obviously, in that the reason Hyman has helped elevate Alexander Burrow style, right, the best offensive players in the league in Edmonton, is something that I wouldn't have known. I don't think anyone could have known, which was that Hyman's work rate allowed him to match McDavid's fitness level. Mm. So that when McDavid and Dreisaitl have those completely exhausting two-minute power play shifts or those 90-second offensive zone shifts, they've actually got a winger who doesn't have to change, right? They've actually got a winger who can kind of match them stride for stride and stay out with them. And that means that you don't have, you know, that 50-50 battle where your winger is quickly running to the bench to be replaced by another guy, and you still have numbers in that situation, and you're still able to maintain possession, and you have those five extra touches, which are five extra opportunities for McDavid and Dreisaitl to do something that makes our jaw drop and you know, decides a game. It's like those sort of intangible things. And I think when we look at, you know, for example, the Solve for X game we played with Batch,
yep.
where it's X, Miller, Besser, DeBrusque, Pettersson, X, right? You know, those are important roles.
Yep.
Like, really, really crucial roles. And sort of when I come back to the Garland thing and wondering, you know, at some point does he get elevated? You know, there's no way you can tell me that the X's that are most commonly used to fill those roles, Sprong, Heinen, you know, on and on. Like, I really struggle with the idea that those guys are superior options to Garland, even if Garland hasn't necessarily, like, caught fire in opportunities with Miller and Pettersson in the past. You know, honestly, likewise with Joshua. Right? Truly. Especially when you consider his hands in tight, right? And sort of what he can do off puck and the uniqueness of that profile. So, anyway, I think that's also part of what we need to be talking about and sort of looking at here when we discuss what this team looks like, right? Like, Barkov plays with Reinhardt and Verhaeghe.
Mm-hmm.
That's a 40-goal scorer and a Selke nominee who just scored the Stanley Cup winning goal and 50-plus goals, right? I mean, there's still... Not that the top six by any means is a question mark, because the Canucks have phenomenal centers and stars.
The top six isn't a question mark. There are question marks in the top six.
That's
like
what I'm saying.
That's an important distinction, right? Like, you still have a relative degree of confidence that it's going to work out, but there's going to be a process to get there, and they're going to have to, like, it might not work out in the first week of the season. It's like, oh, actually, you know what? We don't love Danton Heinen there. We're going to try something else.
Yeah. I mean, look, Heinen has not been a top line fixture at any point in his career to this point. It's not to say he can't be, right? But there's still sort of question marks, even in the areas that we look at and think the Canucks have strengths. I think their core should be significant enough, talented enough, gifted enough, enough of an advantage night to night for that to sort of be outweighed, right? For them to have the answers or find the answers as the season goes along, especially with, you know, sort of the trust we have in this coaching staff. But, you know, I do think there's going to be a process, especially if you're talking about how does this team break into the top five. You know, is the top six set as with the bodies currently here? Or is even that part of it, the part that we take most for granted when discussing this team, you know, something that may need to be addressed and leveled up as the year goes on?
I do think... Yeah, if one of the ways we're framing this Canucks season, and I think it's a totally fair one, is how do they break into the top five? Part of what that looks like, as I'm saying, you know, go out and add another core contributor or, like, fringe core contributor at least. But part of it is one of the players they've brought in on the wings finds really, really good chemistry, like fits at a high, high level going into this season. All right, we've got just about 10 minutes here before we wrap up, but we're very pleased right now to be joined on the line by the newest member of the Vancouver Canucks organization. He is goalie Kevin Lankinen. Kevin, thanks for doing this. We really appreciate it. How are you?
Yeah, good to be here. I'm doing well. I just got off the ice for the first time with the boys, so I'm excited.
Yeah, what was that like to get here and, as you said, get that first go on the ice with your new teammates?
yeah, I mean, it was great. I think both were going pretty hard after it. Pace was good. So, like I said, it's super exciting to be here, and I can't wait to get going.
Kevin, you've faced the Canucks before. You've played, started a game in this building just last season. But getting a chance to practice with Pettersson, with Miller, does it give you a different perspective on some of your new teammates?
Yeah, I think it's always fun to see this side of it. Obviously, when you play against those guys, top-end, high-end players, I mean, you're trying to do a little bit of homework to know what they're doing, but now actually to be able to practice and see in their habits. Both are, I think, great leaders, and you can see that the skill they have on the ice is pretty special. So I think as we go along here, I think probably learn a couple of things from them and hopefully teach them a couple of things too.
And Kevin, I know you're from Helsinki. The Canucks goalie coach, Marco Terenius, is also from Helsinki. I understand that you guys have done some work together in previous summers. Can you go into sort of the relationship that you have with the Canucks first-year goalie coach and sort of how that mutual trust perhaps made this a comfortable place or a comfortable team for you to join?
Yeah, I mean, Marco's great. I think he's one of the best goalie coaches out there. He's a great goalie mind. He thinks the way, like, as a special goalie mind, thinks that he does his homework. He wants to be the best. He wants his guys to be the best. And he's always, you know, geeking out other guys and what they're doing to be successful. And I think working with him the last 3, 4, 5 years back home in Helsinki with goalie skates during the summer, I think that familiarity helps a little bit because the philosophy that he has regarding the game is a little different, and there's absolutely a couple of things that we're going to keep working on, and I think he's the right guy to help me take another step on my career too.
For a goaltender specifically, how much of an adjustment is there joining a new team? And you, as you said, you have the relationship with Marco Terenius already, but what goes in for a goalie to adjusting to, you know, learning your new teammates, maybe learning a new system, and the whole process of joining a new organization?
I think there's a lot of off-ice stuff, obviously getting to know each other, getting to know everybody and getting comfortable. But even I'll tell you, just after one day, everybody's been super welcoming and to greeted me with open arms. So I'm really excited about that and what comes to the on-ice stuff. I think there's always going to be a little bit of adjustment seeing how the guys play in front of you. But as a goalie, I think your main job is just to focus on the puck and stop the little thing. So I think it's going to get only easier from here.
Kevin, when you think about joining an organization, and you know, obviously there's some uncertainty with Thatcher, and you know, Artur Seelov's a promising young goaltender who's established himself both in the Stanley Cup playoffs and you know, on the international stage. How do you sort of approach that conversation approach that sort of opportunity that's ahead of you in Vancouver this year?
Yeah, I mean, I'm super excited to firstly meet both of those guys and start to work with Thatcher and Artur and obviously Marco, because I think watching both goalies last year, they have some exceptional talent. And even Thatcher, I think he's proven that he's one of the best goalies in the world. And Artur obviously showed that he's capable of playing some big game hockey. So I think always when you play with some of those high-end guys, there's a thing or two that you can learn from those. And I played previously with a couple of really good goalies, with Marc-Andre Fleury and then Juuse Saros, and being lucky enough to learn things from them. And I think hopefully this is an opportunity to learn a couple of things from Thatcher and Artur as well.
Yeah, I'm curious, because you had the ice level view of Artur's during the playoffs last year. What did you make of his game? How impressive was he for a young netminder?
Yeah, I think he was super impressive just for him to come in such a situation and in a series for his team. I think that tells a lot about his demeanor. It tells about his mental strength and just like all nice stuff too. You can tell he's really skilled. He's really talented. So I'm excited to get in the ice with him and maybe share a couple ideas.
And Kevin, can you walk us through what sort of your last couple weeks have been with a specific focus on your travel over the last 48 hours? I'm sure it's been a whirlwind, especially as you sort of waited to join an NHL team, you know, into September.
Yeah, I mean, I flew in Sunday night, so everything kind of evolved pretty quickly. But I've been preparing for a long time back home in Helsinki. I've been skating every day. over there and working with my strength coach, Ari Rasanen, and over there, so I'm probably in a better shape than ever been before because of this long summer that I've had. And even going through the whole summer of negotiations, there's been a lot of good opportunities in different teams that we've talked to. But at the end of the day, I felt like when this opportunity came up, it was just too good to pass on with all things considered. You look at the team, you look at the coaching staff, you look at the city. I think it's just an unbelievable opportunity to take another step on my career.
So you got the first skate now under your belt with the new team, and we heard head coach Rick Tocchet say he wants to get you in a game pretty soon here in the preseason, you know, maybe on the weekend, maybe next Monday. What's the process look like for you from here on out? As you said, you feel like you're in great shape, but what's the process from here to get ramped up and make sure you're ready to go when the regular season starts?
Yeah, I mean, I'm confident to jump in anytime they want me to. We haven't really had that discussion yet, but after this first skate, especially, I feel really good to join the team. And I know I'm a little late to the party here, but at the same time, I've been preparing really well, as I said. So whenever they want me to play, I'll be ready to go.
Kevin, really appreciate it taking some time after the skate today, and congratulations on being here and the contract with the team. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
That is new Canucks goalie Kevin Lankinen taking a few minutes to chat with us again. As he said, first time on the ice with the new team and already very welcoming atmosphere, as he described, and of course elaborating a little bit on that relationship with Marco Terenius and speaking very highly about what Marco Terenius can do for him and the way he coaches the goaltending position as well. We don't have a ton of time left here, Drancer, but you know, we talked about it a little bit yesterday, just how vital it was for the Canucks to get a goalie with Lankinen's experience and Lankinen's track record of performance at the NHL level in to be part of this group going into the season.
Yeah, Lankinen's got a lengthy track record, 100 plus games. He's been an average, at least, puck stopper. There have been signs of progress in his puck stopping. You know, his puck handling, I think, is at a slightly lower level than the other Canucks goaltenders. So that's sort of one area where getting in now, getting some familiarity with Canucks defenders, I think is going to be important. Rick Tocchet discussed, as people heard in our second segment, or our third segment, excuse me, the idea of Seelovs having earned this first preseason game. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to have the inside track to sort of run with, you know, the quote-unquote number one opportunity until Demko's back. But man, getting a goaltender like Lankinen, like a steady drumbeat proven NHL goaltender like Lankinen in, gives this team the sort of baseline that you need. And you know, because anything can happen. Like, Seelov struggled with inconsistency last year at the American League level, even if he sort of turned it on and was great for the Canucks in the Stanley Cup playoffs. We saw some of the seams show in terms of battling through to make saves through layered traffic. There's going to be a learning curve or bumps in the road as Seelov sort of levels up into being a full-time NHL goaltender. Having that baseline sort of security blanket that I think Lankinen brings, man, I think that was absolutely essential given everything else that's happening in the Canucks crease.
Preseason coverage on 650 brought to you by Tile Town as BC's favorite hockey team kicks off a new season. Receive 20% off any regular priced in-stock tile. Visit mytiletown.ca for details. Introducing Seeker, Canada's new free app for your ears. Dive into live radio, captivating podcasts, the latest news and sports updates all in one place. Whether you're rediscovering music, debating last night's game, or laughing along with your favorite DJs, Seeker has you covered. Plus, there are some of the best prizes in the country up for grabs. It's all here in one easy-to-use app. Download Seeker for free from the App Store or Google Play. Seeker, seek your sounds. Find the radio, podcast, news, and sports you love. Canucks versus Kraken tonight at 7. Full pregame game and postgame coverage here on Sportsnet 650. And we will be back tomorrow with more Canucks talk on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on the People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets. Weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.